Yeah, hear me okay? All right. Welcome to the happy hour session of Tech Ed. Thanks for joining me rather than joining your bartender. I know this was a hard decision. I won't feel bad if you leave early or if you just get the shakes or whatever. I know this is a very busy week for everybody. My name is Ned Pyle. I'm a program manager in Windows Server at Microsoft. I own DFSR. So if you don't like DFSR, it's my fault. So today I'm going to talk about why you should like DFSR now. You might not have liked DFSR for the last few years. We tried to fix that. This is going to have a lot of demo, and the idea is you're going to come out of here knowing how to do some stuff. I'm not a great with the slides and the animations and the whatnot, so I'm going to stick heavy on doing stuff, and I'll make sure that everything we do is got public information, and it is almost, I kind of ripped myself off. I made a lot of this content public earlier. Feel free to go and use it, and if you fall asleep in the next 2 minutes, you'll be fine. Just don't forget to do the survey when you wake up. The original title of this presentation, well, I had a few different ideas that the tech ed folks didn't really like DFSR has been hitting the gym, it's got roid rage, it beat me up and took my lunch money. What we're left with is scalability enhancements. And what that means is we're going to talk about all the ways that DFSR in 2012 R2 is finally, after many years, ready to take on some bigger workloads, replicate faster, be more reliable, cut down initial sync time, and generally make you more happy to use this product. So we'll talk about DFSR as a quick refresh in case you've been humming along and hadn't really thought about what it does. We'll talk about all these new features, cloning, PowerShell, perf tuning you can do, restoring files, database, all this stuff. And we'll do lots of demo. If you've got questions, there's microphones around, or you can just shout them out, and if I can hear you, I'll try and repeat it. If I don't cover something in the presentation, and you get to the end, you're like, oh, I wonder if they didn't talk about a feature that they added that I really want. No, we didn't add it. I didn't forget to talk about great stuff. So if you don't see the thing that you want, it's still on the list. I probably know about it. You've probably been yelling about it for years. It's okay. My email address is nedpyle@microsoft.com. I don't care who knows it. nedpyle@microsoft.com. Feel free to email me. I will feel free to ignore your emails. But I usually respond pretty quickly. Okay, so let's talk real quick about refreshing on DFSR in like 2 minutes or less. It stands for Distributed File System Replication. This is file-based, multi-master replication. It's pretty long in the tooth. This came out in 2003 R2. So that's 5 OSs ago, which is good. It means it's as stable as it's going to be at this point. It's asynchronous replication. It's file-based replication. This is not... SRDF, this is not SnapMirror, this is not any one of those array-based replication technologies. This is file-based. You close the file, you replicate the file. You leave the file open, we don't replicate the file. Which is good, it means it's geographic. Going long distances is DFSR's bread and butter. And that's because it uses this thing called RDC, remote differential compression. Take a file, replicate it once, full file. All right, got the file. Change the file a little bit. I'm just going to replicate those little bits of change. You can distribute data out, say like you want to blow out all your Office 2013 installs to all your branch offices with DFSR. It's great. You drop it in a folder. Magically, it's on 1,000 other servers. And you can pull data back. So if I've got 1,000 branch offices, I'm sure not going to run the backups in those branch offices, right? Because you know what's going to happen if you try to run backups in a branch office. You might as well just not even bother to set it up. So you pull them all back, you back them up in the main office, high five. We replicate sysvol on domain controllers. This has been going on since 2008, and I have a little tidbit about this towards the end you're going to want to keep your ears open for. I have no giant announcements in this session, but I do have some tidbits you'll like. Maybe you won't. So, let's talk about Microsoft using DFSR. We use the crap out of DFSR because we made it and we try to use our own stuff. So this is the career site at Microsoft. A little bit old. This is everywhere that Microsoft has an office. Everywhere. All of Jamaica and Panama and all this stuff. Trinidad, there's a job as a career open in Trinidad. I just checked before I came in here. It's an MCS job. You should get on that site right away. Here's Australia, a bunch of jobs. And Australia is really interesting because it's a country that's about the size of the continental United States, but really only has the population of like New York. They're spread all over the place. That makes a great example for DFSR. They're down in all the little edges all around here, and nothing is particularly near anything else. I mean, look at the scale. 250 miles is kind of like the go-to number for getting between cities in Australia. This makes DFSR really useful if you've got files you want to push out to people, stuff you want to pull back. You want to give everybody the latest procedures from HR and just blow it out there and not have to sit there and worry about them figuring out how to come get it, how to transport stuff. DFSR makes it really easy. So this is going to do something. Okay. And DFSR is not a cluster. And you have clusters. Everybody in here probably has at least one cluster. Clusters are great. You put a couple servers on a rack. What could go wrong? One node could die. Who cares? 10 nodes could die. Who cares? Okay. On the left, that's the Verizon data center in downtown Manhattan, a few minutes after Hurricane Sandy. That's the ground floor. That's like the lobby. It's about 3 feet deep there. Where are all the cables coming into the building? They're in the basement. So they're all underwater now, and they don't work, so this is over. Whatever clusters they had, doesn't matter. On the right is that same storm. It's hard to see, because especially for you guys way in the back. That's Atlantic City in the middle, and that's Lake Michigan on the left. And in between there is the entire storm, so your cluster would not have helped you there. I'm actually on the cluster team. I kind of bag on the clusters, but I'm, you know. It's a friendly rivalry. Make sure I have my machine unlocked here. Ooh, hang on. Okay. All right, so that's all great. I'm done making fun of the cluster team for the rest of the day. What's new? Now, one thing I'm not going to talk about today before I get going here, what's new section, I'm not going to talk about the cloud or Azure. This is being recorded. I'm sure my boss doesn't listen to this one. But I am going to talk about the information worker, the enterprise, the IT shops that you're all running right now. And I know that, you know, I know here everybody's going to say that we're never going to do the cloud and we're never going to do any of that stuff. But, you know, life goes on in the meantime while the cloud comes along, right? This is here right now. You're probably using this right now. And we know, I mean, we really do know. We're not idiots. I mean, despite a lot of evidence to the contrary, we know that you're going to be using our traditional enterprise products for some years to come, which is why we invested in improving them as recently as our latest OS. Right in the middle of the big cloud hullabaloo, we're still improving this stuff for you. So we know you're going to use it. Okay. At a very high level, management, performance, reliability, scalability. That's what I'm going to talk about today, these four sort of pillars in DFSR. That means that kind of at a little bit more lower level, PowerShell, WMI, cloning, which is beyond sweet, just wait for it, cross-file RDC disable, staging to some tuning stuff, database merge, some database recovery pieces, and restoring preserved files. All this is going to go towards raising our supported limits. So stay to the end, and you'll find out what the supported limits are. If you leave early, you're going to miss out on the supported limits. Very exciting. Okay. PowerShell. I know that you don't like PowerShell. I mean, I know some of you like PowerShell. Some of you have to like PowerShell. But most people are like, oh, man, thanks for the new way of doing the same stuff I was already doing. And there's a lot of not great PowerShell out there. I mean, there's plenty, trust me. I worked in support for 8 years at Microsoft. So what we decided to do was make all new PowerShell for DFSR, which never had it before, but really do it with intent. Really think about, like, what do I not like about other PowerShell I've seen? And there's plenty of examples of terrible PowerShell. Let's not do what they did, okay. Let's make sure that we take all the knowledge we have, all the tools that we've been using, make sure they're all in PowerShell, one easy spot to use, not running all these 14 different little, you know, hacked up little things we've been doing. Make sure they do exactly what you can already do, at least, and then do it easier and better. So the idea is that you will actually want to use PowerShell, not just feel as though, you know, we're encouraging you to use PowerShell. It really is the right answer. I mean, having, you know, you get to the part of managing dozens, hundreds, thousands of servers, getting on there with the GUI is no good anymore. You get to the idea of managing lots and lots and lots of machines where you've got different tools and you have to learn how each set of tools works. And I got to tell you, when it comes to like designing command line tools at Microsoft, there is no plan. It's just whatever some devs like banged out real quick, oftentimes just to kind of scratch an itch. And then that goes in the box and you get it and it's terrible. PowerShell really kind of forces some rigor and, you know, parental supervision onto the design process so that the experience is consistent. And when you start getting into core server and min shell and RSAC clients and you're coming at all these machines that have various degrees of GUI-ness or not, it's great to have one command line that you know is going to work everywhere. So what's some interesting stuff we did in PowerShell? Well, we're thinking about DFSR. DFSR is always going to be two machines at least, right? That's the whole point. It could be hundreds of machines. So we want to make it easy to go and touch lots of machines at once. I'm a huge proponent of I should be able to type one command and go do everything, and then I'll just come back later after I have some lunch. That's my thing that I always want to see in good PowerShell. I should be able to look at something which is hard to do right now. It should be much easier to do. So if we've decided after many years that we've got some recommended behaviors you should do when setting up DFSR, why don't we make our new PowerShell do that by default rather than whatever the old command line did because nobody knew any better? So that's what it does. If you use the minimum PowerShell, you get the recommended config. You kind of have to go out of your way now to hurt yourself, which is fine. I'll let you hurt yourself. And again, coming from that support angle, there is nothing that makes me more furious than the parameter is incorrect, access is denied, object type not found. That kind of nonsense drives me up the wall. So the poor developer who got assigned to this, who lived in his office for 4 months, well, I came and beat him with a stick. He had to add about 200 custom errors over the course of that time frame. And if we ever had a problem where we saw the error and couldn't figure out the problem from the error, that became a bug. We had to go fix that other bug besides the bug that he already had. He's dead now. Okay. Big on pipeline. Big on parameter names, big on making it easy to autocomplete. I have fists of ham. I cannot type, which is embarrassing considering that if you think about it, I basically type for a living, right? I write emails and I write specs and I set up meetings and stuff. I can't type at all. So PowerShell is great for me because if I let it and I set it up correctly, it will do all the work for me. And I'll show you that in the actual demos. And if you're like somebody who's a crazy person who liked our old command line tools, hey, we made sure to even sort of duplicate, so if you're used to running DFSR admin, those commands still work inside of the PowerShell. So if you've got ghost fingers that are still typing old commands, it'll still work. Okay, so let's say I want to create a three server hub and spokes. One server, two spokes, with the old tools, so the snap-in, or DFSR admin. That's 18 GUI windows. It's not so bad. I mean, you're clicking pretty fast, right? You know, there's not a whole lot of work to do there. Or if you type these 12 DFSR admin commands, that's not looking like it's ever going to work for me. Has anybody ever tried to use DFSR admin at all? Were you happy about it? All right, yeah, that's about what I figured. This will be 5 commands with PowerShell. That's good, but I bet I could still beat you with the GUI right now. Okay. What do I want to do 100 servers? Tough guy. 406 of those commands. Good luck. That's 121, and I'm being very, very optimistic there. I'm not having to click through and type anything. I'm browsing. I'm not counting the little dialogues that come out and all that kind of crazy. It's just like the main dialogues. Good luck not making a mistake on like the 102nd one. Or I can do 4 PowerShell commands. Just give it a list of servers and 4 commands. Be done. That's pretty good. That makes me like PowerShell a little bit more. How about 1 command? So we have a script up on the TechNet script gallery. It does the most common setup configuration case there is, but it's unsigned, so you can go and add whatever you want to it. And it's probably got 3 times as many comments as it has lines of code. It's designed to be a teaching exercise so that if you want to take this thing and hack it up and add whatever you feel is important to it, it'll be very easy to understand what we were doing in the script. Let's actually do some stuff. Does that look okay in the back? You can see the, I tried to blow that up pretty good size. All right, let's take a look. Let's get command. I'm loving the tab autocomplete already, right? Module. Notice how little typing I ever actually do in this exercise. These are all new commandlets. There's a lot. They cover every single thing you could ever do and some stuff you could never do before. Some all new stuff. The examples in here, let's look at this one. Get DFSR file hash. I'm a big believer in examples, and I'm a big believer in not having to go to the internet. This has an example of how to get a file hash. You know how DFSR works? It makes a hash of the file that it thinks is, you know, a unique representation. And if the hash is the same on the file here as it is here, you know you've got an identical file in every way. Identical security, identical data, identical alternate data. It's all there. This example goes through and shows, how do I compare? How do I look at 2? How do I look at a filter where I'm just looking for certain files? How do I do recursive searches? How do I actually build a little compare option and like throw up 2 servers and just be like, yeah, everything looks the same, or whoa, what are these guys doing different? That's all possible. These are like copy and paste examples. Just change the name of the server or whatever and you're good to go. Let's do some actual making of DFSR. New DFSR. Yeah, I'm not gonna type any of this. You're gonna see me autocomplete everything so that we get out of here before we retire. Group name, RGO1. Now, I could keep typing some other stuff here, but I won't because that's all I need. Technically, that's the first position. I could have ignored doing group name. I could have just done RG or RG name. RG is the short, we'll always have a really short parameter, and we'll have the one that DFSR admin used to use if you're psychotic. So group name, RG01, pipe, new DFS, replicate. You already know what's coming, replicated folder, right? Notice I'm not supplying the group name anymore because I'm doing a pipeline. Here's RF01. I'm going to add some servers. Don't need to specify the folder name. Don't need to specify the group name. That's all good. Notice how I'm not having to run this command 14 times like I would with DFSR admin because I do collections. So I can give it a list of servers, as many as I want. I could point to a file with servers in it. I don't care. That just created my RG, my RF, added my 2 servers to it. Okay. Add DFSR connection. Notice the lack of typing again. I could make a little parameter or a little variable that would hold my replication group, but we'd be too bored for words at that point. Source computer name, servo1. I mean, I'm not typing anything, right? I mean, I know that PowerShell kind of sometimes blows, but if you like learn to use the tab, it's great. SRVO2. Notice how it just created connections in both directions. not in one direction like all of our old tools do, which then complain that you did them in one direction because that's bad. So our tools would make you do something bad and then yell at you about doing something bad. That's gone. You can opt out of this if you want to do something bad. There's a parameter for that. And then I'm going to do membership. And I have my folder up here. Again, variables would have been helpful here, but you know, whatever. Here's my little path, very imaginative path. I'm setting a primary server. This one is pretty dangerous, right? Because I'm messing around with something which could already exist, or I'm actually setting up replication. So this one's going to say, whoops, it's going to say that you don't know how to type. Right there. Group name, folder name, da da da. Yep. Network path not found. So they actually got a legitimate error that there's no ARV01 server. Yes. Okay. I have replication running on one server. Look how lazy I am. Okay. I don't need that anymore. Yeah, I don't just change that to 2. All right. Laziness complete. So I have replication set up. Does anybody know what I need to do after this to get replication to start working? It's not like a trick question. If you don't know, it's okay. Somebody say poll AD? Yeah. You can wait 5 minutes, or you could poll AD, the old DFSR diag command. Well, I don't want to run DFSR diag because, you know, PowerShell. So I'm going to do update DFSR configuration, SRV01, SRV02, both together. Couldn't do that before. Good. What if I don't care? What if I just set up like 100 of these servers? Am I going to type all the server names to update? Hell no. DFSR member, get all the members, pipe that stuff over to update. Sure. Sure. Show me what you're doing. Okay, I updated those servers. That's pretty easy. The idea here is that all the endless commands you had to run one and run another one and run another one and run. That's all gone now. That's the idea. What about that script I have? Cool, it's prompting me for stuff. RGO2. Well, let's make RGO6. RFO6. Actually, let's do this. We'll be even cooler. We'll do it from the line. Group name RGO6. What's cool about this one is we got a little fancy. Is I can specify hubs, spokes, who's the primary. It does some cool stuff. Watch this. SRV01 is going to be my primary. SRV02 and SRV03 will be my other guys. Primary is going to be, we're going to do a data distribution. So this will be SRV01 as my primary guy. My path here, RF01. I don't really care about the rest of this stuff. Go, baby, go. It like checks to make sure that DFSR is installed. Because you wouldn't believe how many times I've done that one. Why isn't it working? Oh, it's not working. Oh, I didn't install it. All this stuff set up, all the replication took it. All those things I was running, even when I'm down to the 5 commands, I could just take it down to the 1 command and be done. So I can actually have a command line that's faster than the GUI, even for the easy cases. That's pretty impressive. What else can we do here? You saw get DFSR member a few times. This tells me, like, you know, all the get commands in here will tell you all about anything interesting you want to know in the environment. Notice how I didn't have to type server names. Wildcards are built in. So if you don't specify a wildcard, or if you do specify a wildcard, we'll return everything. And you can use that to your advantage. So, like, for example, if I want to get DFSR member again, and let's see, where's my group? Whoops. RGO1, right? Set DFSR membership. Membership. RFO1. Whoop, typing. What if I want to, like, change my staging path quota on every server I've got in that RG? Every one. If I want to change it on every server I've got in the company right now, I've decided, like, oh, man, the default staging is so small, makes the FSR so slow. Why did Microsoft make the default size so small and so slow? Sorry. Well, it's a lot easier to go and fix 100 servers with one command than it is to go touch 100 servers each with the GUI. Much, much easier. You're working with, you're troubleshooting with Microsoft. You're talking to Justin Turner, who's sitting down in the front. I'll give you his email address later. He's a third tier support escalation engineer. He probably already got his phone number. But when you call and he says, well, you need to update the, we're going to up the logging, we're going to like make more logs, we're going to sit there and watch this problem and, you know, make sure it happens, and we're going to catch the data, rather than going around to 100 servers and turning up the logging verbosity and making sure that you got more logs, you run one command here. That's it. You can't screw it up. It's impossible. This is a big problem when you're troubleshooting is, how does Murphy's Law work? Okay, we got 100 servers. We got the data from all of them. The problem happened on the one server over there. Oh, I forgot to turn on the logging on that one server out of the 100. That's the only start over. Okay. Let's bull forward a little bit here. That's just a taste. I have lots of stuff, much deeper dive at this article here. Has tons and tons and tons of info, examples. We have in the product about 102, 103 examples come with the PowerShell itself. You average at least two per commandlet. We try to make this easy. That article covers everything I've done and more just now, so if you were asleep, you got it. It's okay. We also have WMI V2. When we did all this, we decided to go with WMI V2, and by decided, I mean we were told we had to do it because WMI V1 is as dead as fried chicken. That's the new namespace, so if you do like scripting, whatever you like to do with WMI, if you write your own implementation of tools for managing DFSR, that's the new namespace. All the classes are ported over. They have like an identical name with like MSFT in front of them, I forget. V1 is still there, so you can manage in R2, you can use the old tools to manage the new stuff. If you try to connect with the PowerShell to some old down-level OS, it's not going to work, obviously, for anything using WMI. And it'll give you a nice error that says, I'm not working because this is an old ratty machine that doesn't have V2 on it. But most stuff in the PowerShell is actually not talking to machines. It's talking to AD. So when you configure an RG and a folder and a membership, you're just using LDAP over the network to talk to some domain controller. That all works fine. So if your entire environment is 2003, God help us, and you have like a Windows 8.1 machine with RSet on it, you can manage probably about 80, 90% of it with the PowerShell. And if you can't, it'll tell you specifically that you can't. Okay. So that's cool. And I know there's some skeptics out there still. Cloning, I hope, will remove any skepticism about what we've been doing here. So I set up initial sync with DFSR. It's really slow. This is kind of an artifact of any file replication system or any replication system block or file, doesn't matter, is when you have to push all the data over, it takes a long time. And even if you already have the data over there, looking at it and confirming it takes a long time. So if I even precede this data, it could take months. We tried. We came to the team, we bought a really fantastic set of servers with about 100 terabytes of storage on each one, which this was a couple years ago, that was no joke, man. And we started to do it, and after 30 days, it had only done a very little amount, and we were very sad. And we started to project out the time, and it was like, oh my God, it's gonna take 200 days for this to finish. Except that's only if it stayed linear. We started watching a little bit further, and it was getting slower. So it was actually more like 300 days it was gonna take. How would anybody look at this and think that it's not broken? If it's taking 300 days, how would I, it's like watching something petrify. Okay, so what did we do? Cloning is an optional feature now that allows you to Take a server, it's already replicating or it's not replicating yet, doesn't matter. Clone its database. You pre-seed the data like you're probably doing already for without the feature or not, you're usually having some data on the server already on both copies. And then you take that database and you inject it onto a bunch of proposed servers. And when they start up, they no longer have to do initial sync. There's some validation that happens on the source that populates the database with some information that we carry along, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a second. And then that's validated again when the other servers get this import copy of the database. There is no communication over the wire at all, except for anything which looks different. Well, if things aren't different, initial sync is over with as long as it takes just to read that database and look at the local file system. It's crazy fast. Export DFSR clone, import DFSR clone, those are the two commandlets to remember. You do the export, you do the import. In between them, or maybe before, you actually pre-seed the data. I hate that word pre-seed, by the way. It's like, it's seeding is the thing. We're not doing something before the seeding. The seeding is the thing, but it's a term that was invented before my time. So you export, you put a copy of the data on the other server. We have a TechNet article out there, and I've got links at the end of this, don't worry, that gives you how to set up, how to do pre-seeding with RoboCopy, NT backup, Windows Server backup, anything you can imagine, and how to validate it if you're using a third-party product, so you can make sure that it's done correctly so you get the value out of it. We even give you at the, and I'll show you in the demo, we give you a hint. So if you export, we'll give you all the RoboCopy commands for anything that you probably should pre-seed. If you haven't done it yet, you can take those RoboCopy commands and just run them. And RoboCopy is a lot faster than we are because he doesn't have to think about anything. He's not sitting there trying to fill a database, think about RDC or anything else. I mean, he's kind of a moron, but he's a really fast moron. So, when we run this command, there's only one thing to really think about. When you run the export command, you're thinking about what am I going to export, which volume, because databases are per volume, and how do I want to validate this? Do I want to do no validation, which is super fast but a little dangerous? Do I want to do basic validation, which says, well, the first one just says, let's just get a record of all the files and folders and fill in the database with that record. The basic one, which is the default, and is a great compromise in performance and fidelity, is we'll get a hash of the ACL, we'll get the file size, and get the last modified date. It's really hard to change a file. It's really hard for a user to change a file and not influence one of those three things. I mean, they could go out of their way and do it, but that guy's like, that's not like a real case. The nice thing about getting a hash of the ACL is the ACLs can never be big. Does anybody know the largest size of an ACL and an NT security descriptor? Not you, Justin. This is 64K. It's tiny. What's that? No, it's just 64K. But the file no longer gets a hash. So if you've got a 2-gigabyte file and a 1-byte file, the amount of time for us to look at it is identical. Doesn't matter. So you have to stop thinking about how big is this data that I'm going to replicate and just start thinking about how many files am I going to replicate. The count is really what's important now because this is so much faster. We took the really slow parts of getting a hash of the entire file and talking about that hash between the two servers. That's all gone now. Now, you still can get a full hash of the file if you want to, and I really don't recommend it because you'll make your performance faster than it was before, but not that much faster. This is, if you've got a small data set and you're feeling a little paranoid, this is fine. It'll make you about twice as fast. Because these numbers are bananas. So on our little first test and some really ratty hardware, you're probably faster than this. Our hardware was like, took 24 days to do 14 million files, 10T. That's the old-fashioned way. We pre-seeded it, let DFSR run. A week and a half, or 3 weeks later and change, it was finally done. With cloning, full validation was 14 days. That's pretty good. With basic, It's down to just under 12 hours. That's really good. With none, it's just down under 7.5 hours. That's fantastic. So from 24 days down to, a long business day on average. And it turns out later that the servers we had were freaking defective and were a little bit slower than we paid for. And I was able to reproduce on some other copies a little bit faster than this. So we did all this testing. This is all public information. We have it all up on the internets, showing you the amount of times we would see doing validation levels, how fast it was, the export time, the import time. It's cruising. And the cool thing about cloning is it's kind of predictable. If you run it on a certain set of hardware, and you've got a certain set of IOPS you can do, and a certain set of CPU you can handle, and you say an amount of data that you're going to run, you can multiply it out. So if you do 1 million files and it takes X long, then 10 million files will take exactly 10 times as long. So none of this weird curve going on like we saw with the initial sync without cloning. It's strictly linear. If you have incredibly complex deep folder structures, you'll start seeing some slowdowns in the cloning process. That's kind of an artifact of when we designed and implemented the feature, we tried to reuse a bunch of code so that it wouldn't be unstable. We're doing this in a big hurry. I mean, you saw how fast R2 came out. I mean, that was nuts. So we tried to make sure that we didn't write new code as much as we tried to shim and recycle old code around. And there was one piece we were using that's just a little bit inefficient around here. But unless you have incredibly complex deep folder structures, you won't notice. We did see some third-party interference in performance, the forefront the first time, which they fixed, so that's okay. But if you're doing this and it's running slower than you would think, try again without, say, your anti-malware software or some backup agent being added or whatever. So all this stuff is all these factors, which means everything I told you already is nonsense. It's really going to come down to you doing your testing. I can do 1 million files on some sad hardware under my desk in my office in 17 minutes, that's crazy. But you should test with your own hardware. And you can't, there's no magic number. You can't tell me that I've got this many files. I can't tell you how fast it's going to be. Just take a small subset, test that, multiply it times whatever you think you're going to do. That'll be the number. All right, let's do some of this. So I'm back over here. Still got my machine. You can see this, right? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to set up. Did I already set up replication? I think I did. Let's do this. New DFS replication group, RGO2. You're going to notice here this time that I don't actually set up all the replication. In fact, I just set up one server without making him have any partners, which saves you a little bit of time. You can also take an existing server. Like I said, you can take an existing server. That's perfectly fine. Folder name, RFO2. And doink. I think I've cheated here already. Let's make sure. Yes. So I have this RFO2 folder here already. It's filled with NED files, 100,000 NED files. And I've already preseeded the data because you don't want to sit there and watch me run robocopy for 5 minutes while the files copy over. Maybe you do, but I didn't want you to watch that. And I'm just going to add one server this time, SRV01. Whoops. It told me just then what I did wrong, thankfully. Although this is not going to work. Anybody know why? Because I already created the replication group. DFS replication group. Watch this. Here, we'll do this. RGO2. Yeah, that's okay. I already blasted it. This one will say, you can't do it because it's already got an RF in it. Okay. We'll go anyway. I don't care. Now, let's go back up to this one and we'll fix it. 02, computer name, okay. So right now I have one server that's got an RG, it's got a replicated folder, it's a member, it has no connections. Notice I don't set up any connections. Set DFSR membership, and it's going to be RG02. Folder name this time is going to be RF02, and it's just me again. And I'm going to set this path over here to this path I already set up. Whoops. And I'm going to make him primary just so that life is good. Okay. That's all good. Update DFSR. Okay. I'm on that server, so I don't need to specify the name if I don't want it. It's another thing is if you're on the server where computer name needs to happen and you're running a command that talks to computers, just run it. You're fine. Okay. Let's try doing an export. Export DFSR clone. It's the D drive. I need to give it a path. That path is to a spot where I'm going to put the database. So I'm going to put it here on a DB clone, super imaginative name. Okay. I'm not going to bother with setting the, you know, the validation stuff because the default is basic and I like basic. Now this is running. It doesn't have any progress. That's not super great. Except that in the event log, we write an event every time we process 65,000 files. So if you watch the event log, you can actually watch the progress going by and you can see how fast it's going. And if I killed this right now, if I killed this process, if I went home, the cloning is still going on. I told the service, he's doing the work. It's just sitting there waiting for it to say, are you done? But if it's not done, you don't need to actually wait. That's why we have the two other commandlets. One of them's called get DFSR clone state. It's just for if you've absentmindedly closed this, you can run it to see like, oh, are you still running? Yes, I'm still running. Notice here that it gave me the copy command to copy my database for free. Just fill in the blank. And the actual RF that's already on this one. If there had been five RFs, it would give me all five robocopy commands. But like I said, I already did that because I like to cheat. So I'm going to run this and specify my other server. Yep. SRV02D. And it's always good when you can't remember your own thing. Oh, yeah. DB clone. Okay. Now, if I go over to my other server, there's my database. There's all my files. This database is literally just the database. When we do the export, we take the other database, the first one offline, we make a copy of it. We do all our work in the copy in case something horrible goes wrong in the middle so we can roll back immediately, and it's automatic. You don't need to actually roll it back. We have a commandlet called reset DFSR clone that in case someday we ever find some problem where it won't fix itself, you could run that as a kind of a ejector seat, but we haven't found it yet. So it copied the database, and it copied a little config file with all the information about what we want to set up, which is kind of nice because if you find that you want to change some things around, like change RF paths and stuff when you're going to your new server, you can just modify the config file and it'll import it and understand what you changed, which is kind of cool. So over here, I'm going to do my import. I need to give it the same, you know, some volume, whatever the volume is that I decided to do. And this time it's a DB clone. Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. So I'm going to go back over here and look at this box real quick. We'll see how slow Event Viewer is today. There's DFS replication. These are all the cloning events. There's the export. There's the I did some work. So here's the export command running. That's at 3:41 and 11 seconds. And there's where it finished. So what is that? 23 seconds? So I just did initial sync. How long did this one take? It's already done. I just did initial sync of 100,000 files probably in about 40 seconds. And this thing wouldn't even be started yet if we were doing it the old way. That's pretty impressive. Basically, what we're thinking is about 99 point, anywhere from 0 to 6%, 99% faster initial sync times. So take it from a month down to a few hours. Take it from a week down to a few minutes. Take it from an hour down to, I didn't even have time to go have a smoke. Now that was a lot of me, I just did a lot of hand waving and demo stuff there. If you want to do this again on your own time, we have two articles. The first one is an actual step-by-step. We have a TechNet article that's the boring step-by-step, and we have that article that's the quasi-humorous Ned way of doing a step-by-step. And then a talk that we did from our test lead about our entire test experience of doing all this work. So if you want to go through and build a test lab and understand how to validate data and all the telemetry and stuff we use, you can understand using her article. It's very interesting. Okay. Time. Performance tuning. Why do I care about performance tuning? Well, DFSR can be pretty slow based on the fact that it was designed to work on horrible, horrible, horrible networks in 2005. Like, what was a really sweet branch office connection in 2005? Like a T1. You know, that's pretty impressive. Now, MPLS or, you know, the dark fiber and stuff people have just laying down left and right. I mean, it's like a joke what we were using 7 or 8 years ago. In the past, you could not configure DFSR's rules around whether or not it should stage the file and think about it or just send the file. It's impossible. It's hard-coded. Now, we have a new value called minimum file staging size that allows you to say, like, if the file's like 1 meg or less, just send it. Stop trying to save me time and money. I have great networks. That's why I'm paying all this money. Use my network. You can do it all the way up to 512 terabyte file size, which is a little, I know, or it's very aspirational. Really what that means is I don't ever want to stage ever, okay? And for the immediate next 10,000 years, probably. You can also now finally turn off cross-file RDC. Does anybody know what cross-file RDC is? You want to shout it out? Cross-file was this really cool technology. It still is cool technology, especially if you've got really terrible networks, that says, not only do I use RDC to just send along the slightly different parts of a file, but if I don't even have that file at all, I've never gotten it before, but I've got some files that are similar to it, I'll take up to 5 of them and look at them and take all the parts I can use and reconstruct as much as I can without you sending all those pieces, up to the point of not having to even send the file at all. And you know, it's pretty likely that if you've got a document, it's probably got like 20 different copies, and then those have been all slightly modified by somebody to put their stamp on it. And then you got a bunch of copies that are just lying around that are identical. This can sit there, find those copies, and just use them to reconstruct your file from thin air. It's pretty cool. Except that if you've got a really great network, it's probably faster just to send the file and stop worrying about it. So we allow you to do that now. It was not configurable before. Now you can turn it off, which is kind of like a not a super impressive feature. I'm telling you how to turn it off to make your DFSR faster. But trust me, if you've got a great network, it's really useful. So if you do this, if you take these two pieces and you tune them right, we have found your regular, ongoing, day-to-day replication be about twice as fast. That's pretty good. Now, don't do this if you still want to use, don't turn off staging if you still want to use RDC. And if you're setting your threshold and you're setting your RDC, because RDC is the configurable threshold as well, make them match. Because if you've got an RDC size of, say, 64K and a staging size that's much larger, you're canceling out your own settings. When should I do this? LAN or crazy awesome WAN? The Uber van. And you want to do this on files that don't change very often. So if somebody's in the habit of making a big file and then closing it and then like reopening it and getting back to that big file really fast, or I don't know why they're doing that, but if they like to do that, you'll get caught into a I can never finish loop if there's no staging. The whole point of staging is to give DFSR a chance to work on a copy of the file without interrupting the user. So if you turn off staging, DFSR says, well, I mean, the user wants to work on it. I'm second-class citizen at all times compared to the user. So I'm just never going to replicate until he gets done, ever. So if your users can never let, if the file's too big that it can never finish before the user shows back up, turning off staging is a bad idea, because now you've made replication really much worse. And it's easy to tell. If you start playing with these settings, and you look and see that your event log's filled up with locked file, couldn't stage errors, or other warnings, you've gone too far. Okay, reliability. These ones don't have a demo because I can't possibly demonstrate there being any reliability problems with DFSR. I tried really, really hard, but I could not break it. I'm sorry. really, I don't do the demo because it's spectacularly boring to watch me corrupt the database and then DFSR to fix it. But the idea is DB corruption used to mean, oh, I have a corrupt database, start over. Let me just throw in my database and start replicating every single file inbound. I don't care. I just want all the new files. Oh, my file was newer. Yeah, I don't care. Just give me the oldest file you got. This really makes everybody cry. Keep going. That really, really sucks. And what's worse is if the other server's corrupt, which this is super common when you have all your DFSR servers on hypervisors, and then you lose power to the hypervisors, and all your DFSR servers crash at once, and they are all using IDE disks with no write-through. You know, somebody's losing the database. So now, instead of starting over and arbitrarily replicating everything in, thereby maybe crushing some new data, we still drop the database, we rewrite the database, but then we treat everything with normal replication vectors. So we say, oh, I have this copy of the file. Do you have that? Oh, you do? Is yours newer than mine? We've got some time information here. Oh, wait, I won't replicate yours in. I actually have the best copy. So you won't lose data anymore if you have corruption. If you manually delete the database, we go back to the old behavior. So if you're using that as a troubleshooting step, like, I don't know what to do, I'm just going to blow away this database, it will authoritatively replicate inbound, or should I say non-authoritatively replicate inbound. And what's cool is also is if the servers he's talking to are also FUBAR, everybody just says, well, let's just work it out later when somebody starts changing files. For now, let's go healthy and start replicating again, rather than sitting there forever doing nothing, which is what typically happens right now. And then the infamous dirty shutdown. I love dirty shutdown. Right now, you get a dirty shutdown if somebody powers off the machine. Somebody kills the service. Something bad happens where DFSR says, I didn't get a chance to decide when I was shutting down that I'm happy. And when you start the service back up, he looks through all his stuff, he thinks about it for a long time, and when he's happy, he starts replicating again. And it's very rare for him to find anything wrong, but the bigger the database, the more waiting he does. So what we do now is, this is what we talk about. What it does is it walks these files and fences them normal. That's, who cares? What we used to do is, starting with a hot fix that came out a few years ago, is say, well, if you have a dirty shutdown, we found some bugs where you might lose data. So rather than fixing those bugs, which was the right answer, we instead said, we'll pause replication and we'll write an event that no one will ever notice, and then we won't replicate ever again until somebody notices it, and then somebody will show up like a month later, like, what's wrong with replication? And you get to tell them, oh, this event told you what to do, so you look dumb. It's not really your fault. Like, it's not even an error, it's a warning. I mean, it's like we were messing with you on this one. I really apologize. Anyway, we fixed the bugs that caused, you know, the data loss. That wasn't so not so hard. And then we turned auto recovery back on by default. So from now on, if we have a dirty shutdown, it just looks through, says everything's fine, it goes back to replicating, and you're back in business. And the really big problem this caused was with AD administrators, because they're not really in the DFSR business. They're in the AD business. And Sysvol, which is running DFSR, They don't care that much as long as it's working. So for them to even think about this being a problem when their DC lost power, you'd find these DCs that didn't have a sysvol for like 3 months. It sucked. So this automatically for sysvol, it's like, yeah, just start replicating again. Let's not worry about this. Okay. Now, who here has ever had to deal with conflicted files, deleted files, okay, pre-existing files? Yeah, that's my favorite one. These are the files that DFSR, I mean, DFSR is a multi-master replication engine. It's got to make decisions when files show up from different spots. If they show up from two servers at once, or from two users at once on two servers, we have to decide what to do about conflicts. If we delete it over here, we have to delete it over on another server. We want to keep a copy of that. And if we set up replication, and one server has got data that's different from another server, somebody's got to lose. That's why we set that primary. Remember I was saying the primary is true on all those ones? I'm picking a server who's going to win all the arguments. And anybody else who's got different files in the downstream, he loses. Okay? Those files move into these hidden folders under the replicated folder. They're really under a reparse point, but, you know, who cares? Called conflicted and deleted or pre-existing. They are hidden, and their contents are unreadable, and they're flattened out so that even if you could read the contents, you don't know what the folder structure is anymore. So it's, again, like we were messing with you. In fact, let me just show you real fast what I mean here. Go over to my super blown-up server, giant font mode. So here is a folder that has nothing in it. When I set up replication, I said, okay, I'm going to set up replication. I got a server that's got all my data. I got a server that's blank. I'm going to go ahead and obviously choose the one that's blank as the primary. That's not actually pronounced, oh, no. That's pronounced, oh, something else. Trust me. That's a production system. But if I go in here and I do the old dance of show me hidden everything, we'll see down here, there's this private folder. Did I zap that thing on here? That can't be right. Oh, that's not good. I'm going to have blown that away. All right, well, that's why I got backups. So there, imagine that's in the other folder. Pre-existing. Oh, look, there's all my stuff. I'm saved. Oh, crap. What are these things called? Why do they have GUIDs on them? What is this folder? Whoa, what are all these files? Oh, my God, what have I done? I have no idea what I've done. Okay, so getting this back is impossible, basically. I had a little VB script I wrote. The first ever DFSR critsit was this case, and it was Microsoft consultants who had done it to one of their customers. So we all had a good laugh about that. You know, the customer was really happy. And we wrote this VB script to pull it all out, and it was a shameful VB script. You'll still find it out there. Please don't use it. Get RSAT. Get these commandlets I'm about to show you. They'll save your bacon. And what you can do now, just to cut to the point here, is these get and restore commandlets finally in the box. You can say, okay, I screwed up. Get me all my stuff back. I don't care if it's deleted, it's conflicted, it's pre-existing, just get my stuff back. I don't care if I need to move it. I'm in a hurry, but maybe I want to copy it in case I really am worried that I'm not having a good day. I want to get, like, do I want all the versions? Yes, you can get all the versions. Do I want the latest versions? Yes. Can I put it back to the same spot? Can I put it somewhere else? Yes. Can I move everything right now? Give me the latest files. Just blow away what's not the freshest stuff and get me back in business so someone stops yelling at me. That is the default. That is all built in now. Let me show you. It's the most boring demo ever because it's so easy to use. So here's my folder, which I had, you know, fouled up. So I'm going to move this over to somewhere a little bit more likely. Put this over on the D drive. Let's blow this guy away. Okay. Just putting this here for the purposes of demonstration. And it's got like, you know, it's a sizable amount of data. It's about 5,000 files. Okay. Let's look at what we got in here. Get DFSR. Preserved files. All I have to give it is a path to that location. There's an XML file in there that has all this info. What is it? Oh no. Was it on the D drive? Did I put it on the D drive? Oh, where am I? Wrong server. Get DFSR preserve. Preserve files, path, D, oh no, man, this is way easier when I do autocomplete. If I just run this, like blammo, that's everything I've got. Man, stop. It tells me what the paths were, what the real name would be if I put it back. I can use this, you know, with like filters and pipelining just to show me, like, just show me the easiest, just show me the deleted files. Let's find out if Sally from accounting really did delete this file. Let's look around here and make sure this actually got deleted and she just didn't imagine the whole thing. Okay, it's there. Okay, I'm going to restore that file. But let's just say that I'm sick of everybody yelling at me. Now remember, this looks like this. Big, terrible mess. Oops. Let's just restore it, because I don't want to be yelled at anymore. Here's my path. My path. Restore it to the original path. I don't want to copy. I don't want to do any of this other extra stuff. I just want to go. Whoa. World's fastest demo. All my stuff's back. You're only applauding because it sucked for so long. That's embarrassing, man. You should be like, finally, what took you? Okay. If you want to see this, get the steps, be able to run through this yourself, have a hip pocket article. It's even got an express guide. The manager is looking over your shoulder section right there. Don't wait. Have that one around. That's one of those like how to restore the backup kind of situations where you don't want to sit there and learn while you're doing it. Okay, we're almost done here. Scalability. What were they? Here's the last big couple cool things. In the past, 10 terabytes per server, 11 million files per volume, 64 gigs file size. That was pretty awesome in 2005, but it's 2014. All right. We've made cloning. We did perf tuning. We did a bunch of other perf tuning in 2012. We upped a lot of RPC changes. We did a bunch of other little things that we didn't really advertise very much. And we made it so it's faster and easier and safer to recover stuff. It's not really faster, but it is much safer to have bigger databases. Okay. 100 terabytes. That's just what we could test. That's what we could afford to test. Again, the size doesn't matter. 70 million files per volume. We went as high as 135 million on a server before we just ran out of testing time. 250 gig file. That number was just pulled out of our Tookus. Could go larger probably. If you're not using cloning, I would not recommend you go into this world here. The cool thing about cloning is, you know, I always talk about using it for initial sync, but let's say you have a database corruption. Database corruption means go back to using initial sync to fix the problem, right? It'll be faster for you just to say like, okay, stop your initial sync, let me just stop the service and just blast myself out of this RG and then just do cloning real quick and fix myself with cloning. Cloning is more than just setup. It's repair. It's crazy fast. Okay. You all know what FRS is. Hopefully you don't know what FRS is. It came out Windows 2000. It is still used in about 80% of sysvols in the world, even though since 2008 you could use DFSR. It has been deprecated in three previous OSs publicly. And then I wrote an article saying like a million times over why you shouldn't use it anyway. This is my one big announcement I'll give you. Whatever OS we ship, and God knows when that'll be because they keep coming every 15 minutes, whatever OS we ship after July 2015 will not have FRS in it anymore. It will not exist, which means that you will not be able to add that domain controller to your existing environment if you're still using FRS. You must get yourself or your customers migrated off FRS in the next however long this is, but your drop dead date at least is July 2015. That's when 2003 support ends. After that, we no longer have any technical requirement to keep FRS around. And we can't keep supporting it. We really kind of gave up on it years ago. Somebody like spent like a whole bunch of effort last week and found this big complicated bug in it and reported it to us, and they did a very diligent job, and I was like, yay, don't care. So don't be that guy. So we have a set of articles on doing migration. They're really quite complete. In fact, they're in some ways kind of intimidatingly over complete. So what my plan is to give you an express guide in the next, I don't know, 6 months or so, if you don't want to, you know, dig your way through the big guide. I mean, honestly, doing a migration of FRS to DFSR can be done in one, and I mean one, command using the DFSR MIG utility. One command. Worst case, three commands. It's not that bad, trust me. And the only issues we've ever found, we've documented in KBs, man, it is pretty bulletproof. I'll give you some more warnings. I just finished saying all this right here, so that I could scratch that one off. And then we're thinking about actually adding some additional assistance in the box in a coming release that will at least warn your customers, like, hey, are you, you know, you still got FRS running here, you should do something about this. Okay? You can, and I'm serious about this one, do email me if you have questions on this, if you have problems, if you want to know about how to get this done. I'm happy to help anybody get off FRS. Okay, so we talked about DFSR, we talked about scalability, cloning, all these pieces, we demonstrated all this stuff. I have enough content to choke a donkey. Please make sure you go and follow the resources and do the surveys. Get yourself an Xbox. There's your code. I have a few minutes left. Are there any questions people want to ask? Oh my goodness, please go to a microphone if you can.
When the DFSR will be supported on the SMB shares?
Right now, you can use DFSR with SMB shares. You don't need it to be SMB or not. It will replicate without. And before everybody leaves, thanks very much for coming to this presentation, guys. Yes, sir.
Will we be able to use DFSR across forests, say if we have a forest-to-forest trust?
Yeah, right now it's only inside of a forest, within domains, but we don't have cross-forest capability, and it's very occasionally asked for, not enough to really justify the enormous amount of work it would be. But if you keep emailing us, that helps.
All right, maybe I can use replication to generate multiple email aliases. And...
Thanks. Yes, sir.
All right, there it goes. Did you work on the biggest 32 files having to be the size of the staging database and that terrible command that will never finish to tell me what the largest size of the 32 files are?
Yeah, that is, it's heinous.
It's terrible.
I'm sorry. We did raise the size of the conflict folder, the conflict and deleted folder, the quota on it. We didn't raise the size of the staging, and we didn't really fix the... I actually wanted a new commandlet added that would tell you the staging size?
Yes.
And I actually, what I really wanted was a heuristic put into the service that would just figure it out and like periodically tell you.
Yes.
We just ran out of time. So we know.
Hit the guy with the stick.
That's a good call. Other question? Yes, sir.
RDC and staging size turn on and off, was that per connection or for the whole RG?
Per connection.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yes.
The partial commands, can I run them on 2008 servers as well, or do I have to run those on 2012?
You have to run them on 2012 R2, but you can run them on Windows 8 clients with RSAT installed, so you don't have to be, if you just got one client, they work remotely and they'll work.
Okay.
Yes.
If you have a destination server set up for replication coming from multiple file servers, you add another file server you want to replicate to it to have another copy of your data, and you want to do the clone, is it going to overwrite the destination or will it append?
No, it doesn't overwrite anything. That's a great question. What it really does is just a comparison. Anything which is different, just like regular initial sync, would go into pre-existing. Anything which is identical doesn't replicate, and anything which is missing gets synced down. So basically, cloning still works exactly like initial sync after the cloning part is done, where it reconciles, because we know that you can't stop letting users access your data while you do cloning. So they're making changes up here or even down here, although that's kind of weird. We'll fix it all up after cloning's finished. Thank you. I don't know who's next. Yes.
All right, great new features. Thank you.
Thanks.
File locking across replicas or keep buying Pure Lock?
No, keep doing Pure Lock, man, or any one of those types of products. We don't have distributed locking, sorry. That's a I know question. I hear you. Yes.
The cloning, are you able to actually split the data if you've got a terabyte and you actually want to clone that over to two servers?
To do multiple clones?
No, to split the data. To take half of the data here and half the data
there? If you separate the data at the top level, so you only create replicated folders at the top layers, maybe in half, you could send those out. But it still works at the RF level, so whatever you say is the RF is what we have to do.
As a clone or just as another replicated
clone? That's in general, but also as a clone, yeah. Any other questions? No, I think we're all good. Thanks very much, folks. Enjoy the rest of Tech Ed.